Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not too bad. I've watched a bit of the cricket, which has been good. Day-night test. I mean, England aren't doing too well. So, but in terms of having cricket on, it's good. But yeah, England are in a bit of trouble. Root and Crawley are both out, which has been who've been England's best two players in the test match so far. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Obviously the team selection has been questioned a little bit, but
a bit.
I mean, I'm personally okay with the team selection because England have picked their best team for what they think the conditions will be. So I'm okay with the team selection. That's probably a similar team I would have gone for. So yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I guess you can only, we'll know in 5 days whether it was right or wrong. So
well, looking at the pitch, maybe not five.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, maybe more like 3 days away England are going in.
Or four. No, I think we'll take it to a fourth. But yeah, about the team selection, what did you think of that, Joe? Because it appeared to me when I saw that team today that India chose their team based on the pitch itself. Obviously, dry seems to be quite dusty. We saw that today with Joe Root kicking up a storm with all that dust cloud when he goes onto the back foot. And then England seemed to have chosen a team based off of the pink ball because of the previous successes by seamers. Do you think it was the right call? Who do you think got it right out of the two teams, just from first glance?
See, the thing with India, obviously, I mean, they're obviously at home and it's their conditions. They know it the best. But, I mean, England are sticking to their guns in pink ball cricket and they've played, what, two pink ball tests? That's it, isn't it?
Three.
One Australian, one. Oh, three.
Yeah, New Zealand. Remember, we got bowled out for 58.
Oh, of course. Okay, so three pink ball tests. But generally, seam bowling is the way to go in the pink ball test England have played. So I guess they just kind of stuck with what they know. And as I say, personally, I would have gone for Broad, Anderson and Archer myself. Maybe they could have put Bess in there, try to fit him in, but I don't know. That's the thing. There's only 11 players at the end of the day that you can pick. So, yeah, it'd be nice if you can have more, but yeah, maybe England choose to cash in on an X-Factor sub. But nah, overall, as I say, I think we'll see at the end of the test who had the better team selection because who will have won the test.
Exactly. Very, very good point, Joe. And of course, yeah, for all those who are listening out there, go and watch the cricket, Channel 4. It's on free-to-air television. Watch it while you can. That's all I'll say. But that's enough about international cricket for the time being. We'll probably bring it up again at some point during today's podcast. But we are actually joined by a very, very special guest here on the County Cricket Podcast today. It is none other than Somerset County Cricket Club icon, Roloff van der Merwe. So Roloff, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the County Cricket Podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. No, it's been a good day so far. Cracking on with the homeschooling. So, it's been a good day.
Well, that's excellent to hear, Roloff. It really is. And have you been able to keep up to tabs with a bit of the pink ball test so far?
Yeah, I watched a bit this morning. I was actually surprised it didn't turn square from ball one. But I think they started off bowling well, India. And hopefully England can put a partnership together and just resist a bit.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, and Roloff, what about yourself? Do you fancy bowling on that? There is a bit of turn on offer on day one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if anything is like turning a little bit on day one, it's always a positive thing because you know what it's going to be like day three, four. So, yeah, I would love bowling on that.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd be in the exact same boat. Fair enough, maybe not in terms of like skill-wise. My floaty, filthy off-spin, probably not as good as yours, Roloff. But no, I think I'd fancy bowling on that. Quite a bit of turn on offer. What about yourself, Jay?
Nah, I'll give it a go. See what happens.
Yeah, well, I suppose you could on that surface. Yeah, and of course, we'll wait and see how that test pans out. But in terms of today's podcast, then, we're going to be talking to Roloff about his early cricketing memories. Then, of course, we're going to be talking about his time down at Taunton for Somerset. And then we're going to round off today's podcast with everybody's favourite segment, Teammates. So, Roloff, to start today's podcast then, let's go right back to the origin of your cricketing journey. What's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Oh, I think, obviously, it comes from my parents. My dad was a cricketer. My mom played some hockey. So, and eventually, my mom became the scorer of most cricket teams my dad was involved in. So, I was always next to a cricket field, fooling around with a bat and ball and watching my dad's mates play and them feeding me balls for throwdowns. So now I've always been in the game. Very lucky that my parents were sporty. So yeah, that's basically from the age where I could walk.
Wow. So a very, very early cricketing journey then in South Africa. And of course, Roloff, what was growing up in South Africa like? What's that like for you in terms of your cricketing journey? Because originally from Johannesburg, it's not exactly the most spin-conducive wicket per se, the Wanderers, is it? But what was it like actually growing up in Johannesburg and South Africa in general?
Yeah, so I grew up in Witbank. I'm not sure you guys will be familiar with Witbank. It's quite a small town at that stage in regards to size. But they eventually moved to Pretoria. And that's where my cricket took off, is when I moved to Pretoria in my, I would say, secondary school. And loved playing there. And I mean, generally in South Africa, it's not much spin on offer. I mean, we're predominantly a country that's known for our express pace. But I think as the game developed and guys started realizing that guys don't play spin that well, there was more space for us.
Oh, yeah, of course. And there are a couple of surfaces in South Africa. Durban, for example, pops into mind. Kingsmead is quite good for the spinners. We've seen that with the Dolphins and Keshav Maharaj for a number of years. So, it's not exactly the easiest place to bowl spin. But, I mean, there's at least some areas in the country, aren't there, where spinners can dominate at times.
Yeah, I think, obviously, in the Highveld, when you look at the Wanderers, Centurion, you know, there's not much spin. But as soon as you go to the coast, you know, Cape Town always offers some spin. Port Elizabeth off a spin. So, I think as a spinner, I was a bit in the wrong part of the country. But luckily, I was with a franchise that were known for producing good spinners. So, I was on board there.
Of course. And, I mean, the spin definitely paid off because you're talking to us here now on the County Cricket Podcast many, many years later.
Yeah, fair enough.
Exactly, Roloff, exactly. But in those days in South Africa, who would you say in the world of cricket you looked up to? Did you have any professional cricketers as icons or role models per se?
Oh, I was a massive Jonty Rhodes fan.
Great choice.
Obviously, I didn't really look much into his batting at that stage. I was just glued to the screen when he was fielding. Mm-hmm. And normally everybody goes for a bowler or batter, but I just love the way he fielded and the energy he brought. So, yeah, Jonty was definitely the guy I looked up to and wanted to be 100% like him.
Have you ever seen a better fielder? Like in all your time of either being a cricket fan or as a player, have you ever seen a better fielder?
No, not with the way he moved and the pace that he did it at. I mean, there's serious fielders in the world. I mean, you look at Ponting and Du Plessis and AB and those boys, yeah. Serious fielders, but just the way he moved and what he made happen was just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, what a fielder. Just generally a great cricketer.
No, exactly. I mean, he calls himself a jack in the box and that's exactly what he was. He was all over the place all the time. And just something about that really interested me and wanted me to sort of pursue that way of playing.
Well, yeah, a good role model as well. And I think he's the head of Cricket Sweden now, isn't he, Jonty? Moved up,
yes,
Scandinavia.
Yeah, so I think he's head of cricket there, and obviously he does a lot of T20 like gigs around the world. So, and he loves traveling. So I think that suits him brilliantly.
Yeah, it's not the worst job, is it? Going around all these countries, franchise cricket, and of course he's a legend. He was with Kings 11 Punjab, wasn't he, in last year's IPL? And of course we saw that brilliant piece of fielding by Nicholas Pooran. So obviously some of the skills have rubbed off on the players that he's worked with. What a player! What's like?
I think having a guy like that in your environment, just especially from a fielding point of view, is, I mean, guys will listen and guys will learn off that. So, no, great guy to have in your setup.
Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. But let's kind of flip the conversation now, and let's talk a little bit about county cricket then. So, Roloff, what were your first memories of county cricket? You know, when you came over here, what were some of your first memories?
Yeah, so the first time I came over was in 2011. I came over as overseas for Somerset and T20 comp. And that year, I think we lost in the semi-final of the Champions League. So we had quite a decent year. So that was basically my first interaction and sort of memories of county cricket in Somerset.
Yeah, Somerset is a great county. You know, consistently over the years, Somerset have produced great cricketers. What were some of your first impressions of Somerset? Because obviously there, as you said, you came in 2011 and over the years, we've seen a lot of change at Somerset and they've really developed into a strong red ball side. But in those early days, what were some of your first impressions of the county?
Well, first things first, I got you, and it was the smallest town I've ever played cricket in. it was literally not much going on. So it was pretty quiet. But I think, you know, the people at the club, even back then and now, has just been, they're so welcoming. So to fit into coming from a different culture and to fit in here, just they made it so much, so easy. And I really took a liking to the club.
Well, yeah. I mean, undoubtedly, they are a fantastic, well, I don't want to call them a little club because Somerset are a very storied club, aren't they? And Taunton as a ground is absolutely beautiful. It really is. Joe, have you made the journey down to Taunton?
I've not, no. No. I've not. I've never really been to many grounds down south, more up north. But yeah, I definitely like to go to Taunton. And I mean, it's turning into a great international venue now. Obviously, seeing it host, well, the women's test last year or 2 years ago. And obviously, some World Cup games. So it's turning into a great venue. And, you know, just, I feel like, yeah, I just like a real, I mean, obviously I said I've never been, but I feel like it's a real community ground. And yeah, it just seems like a great place to go and watch cricket. And I'm sure it's a great place to play cricket as well.
Yeah, I think obviously with Taunton being Taunton, you don't have the major football sides in your proximity. There's no rugby. I mean, Exeter Chiefs is the closest big rugby club. So there's a lot of focus on the cricket in Taunton, which makes it also special and well supported. It's a great place to play. And I mean, like for me raising a family, I think it's spot on location for me.
Well, yeah, it's such a picturesque place. I know it's not exactly the busiest place. It must be quite different, obviously, from Pretoria, which is a bustling city in South Africa. But in terms of the club itself, Roloff, how would you actually describe Somerset County Cricket Club in terms of the fans, in terms of just the atmosphere surrounding the club? How would you describe Somerset County Cricket Club?
Oh, except for awesome. I think, you know, it's very, I think the link between supporters and the players are pretty close. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real good relationship, and it's almost, we know each other on a sort of a personal basis. And yeah, no, it's, I think, I mean, if you look at our T20 attendance and selling out before the season starts, I think that just shows you what the interest in cricket is in Taunton and the love for it here.
Oh, absolutely. They love their cricket, don't they, down in Somerset, or Somerset, as they say in the local accent. Yeah, it's we're going to keep on saying it in this podcast. But by the way, Roloff, I forgot to mention, you're also the first Somerset player on the podcast. So that's why we're waxing lyrical about Somerset County Cricket Club, because we've been wanting to talk about them for ages in a bit more in depth. So it's fantastic to have this opportunity. And of course, talking about Somerset, what do you remember from your debut in 2011?
Oh, I think my debut, I'm trying to think, we played away against Kent at the Tunbridge Wells.
That was your second game, and you scored it. That was the 89 not out, game. Wasn't it?
Okay, I thought that was... Okay, well, that was a good game, so I probably remember that as my debut. So, what was my first game then?
Well, I thought it was against Hampshire at the Rose Bowl.
Could be. I mean, it is 10 years ago, and I am kicking on a bit, so my memory isn't that great.
Let's talk about the second game then instead, because in terms of your debut at the Rose Bowl, Hampshire won. But let's talk about that game against Kent, the 89 not out. What do you remember from that day? What were you feeling before that? Because obviously it's only your second ever game in English conditions. You're playing against Kent at, let's face it, an absolutely beautiful outground at Tunbridge Wells. What's going through your head on that day?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Kent had a very good side. I think Rob Key played, Martin van Jaarsveld played then, Azam Mahmood was there. Because I remember playing and Azam went for a few runs early doors. And he's like, no, we'll come back. But later, he came back, I think, in the 11th over, and the ball was reversing like around corners. And I was like,
T20.
In a T20. I think, and I thought to myself, this guy's an absolute genius. So, yeah, now what an experience. I mean, obviously, I knew Martin from playing for Titans. Mm-hmm. So it was good playing against them. And obviously, the likes of Rob Key was nice to play against those boys.
Well, yeah. And what a game. As I said, 89 out in your second ever county cricket game. I mean, right from the off, you've already kind of secured your, well, I suppose your place in the hearts and minds of Somerset fans there. I mean, the Somerset fans who spoke to us about this, they still remember that knock.
Yeah, I think, but it's also comes with the territory of being overseas, you know. You want to impress early. You don't want those question marks to come up early doors, you know. So there's a bit of pressure always with that, but it's always nice to put in a performance early so you can settle in and take the pressure off.
Absolutely. Of course, yeah. Very, very important. And in terms of, you mentioned there, the pressures, when you first came in 2011, did you feel a lot of the weight of expectation on your shoulder? Or did you just kind of adapt to the game quite naturally? How did you actually find your first season in English county cricket?
I think, obviously, playing IPL before that and playing against serious players, big mm-hmm. and in big capacity crowds, you know, I felt quite comfortable playing on that in my first season here. But always when you go to a new environment, new set of fans, new set of managers, new teammates, you know, you want to make sure that you obviously put in some good performances and, you know, it just makes the welcoming a bit easier.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you've already said it, you need to kind of establish yourself amongst your teammates in that dressing room as well. It's massively, massively important. And of course, then you came back to Somerset just, what was it, five seasons later, 2016, you came back to Taunton. If we're going to say it in retrospect then, because you've been there, obviously, 2011, you came back in 2016, and then obviously you've just signed a one-year contract extension. Congratulations for that, by the way, Ruluf. We mentioned that on our previous weekly podcast. But if you had to sum up maybe one highlight or maybe one or two favourite moments from your time at Taunton so far, what would you choose? I mean, I've definitely got a couple in mind.
I would say, obviously, winning the Royal London in 2019 is a massive highlight. But also, I think finals day, just going to finals day was an unbelievable experience. I mean, the festive environment that they've put up there and just the whole vibe around it is, it's an unbelievable day. So even though we lost in the semi there, it was still something that sticks with me and experience I'll always remember.
Yeah. What a place. Yeah. Fortress Edgbaston. The only place in the country which could really host finals day, in my opinion, of course, as a Warwickshire fan. It is just brilliant. And I've actually got my tickets for 2021, so fingers crossed we can get in for finals day. But Ruluf, I wanted to talk about one game in particular, and I think you'll know which game it is. 2017 Royal London One Day Cup against Surrey. So I just wanted to touch upon this in a bit more detail. First of all, before that game began, what were you feeling? What's going through your head?
Well, I think they actually had a pretty good side out there on that day. It was just another game. You know, it's you want to win every game because you know you want to qualify going further in the competition. So, but yeah, no, just a normal day and, you know, excited to compete with those boys. They always put out a strong fight. You know, they are a very competitive unit. So it's we knew it's going to be tough, but yeah, I never thought it'll happen like that.
Well, no, let's go through that day then, because Surrey scored 290 for 8. That's what they got from their 50 overs, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then in the first 7 overs, Jade Dernbach and Sam Curran tear through Somerset's top order. Somerset 22 for 5 in the 7th over, chasing 291. And Ruluf, you come out into the crease with your fellow countryman, Dean Elgar. At that moment, okay, before obviously we all know what happened, the rest is history, to put it in a cliche term. But did you really think that Somerset could win that game from there? You're 22 for 5. Okay, you've got to score another 269 runs with 5 wickets remaining in 43 overs. Were you feeling confident or were you just thinking, go out there, let's try and get as close as we can? What's going through your head at that particular moment?
Yeah, I think just start off them getting 290. We thought, okay, they're definitely shorter. I mean, batting at Taunton in white ball cricket generally, it's big scores. I think we've had 3 scores now over 400 almost being chased. So we were very confident going into that chase that we would reach that comfortably, and we had a serious batting lineup. So yeah, walking in at 22 for 5 and it really looked tough. It looked like, oh, this could be a 40 all out type of game. But yeah, I think when I got into the middle with Dean, he basically just said, just knuckle down, bat for a few overs, 10 overs or so, see what happens. And maybe, you know, you never know, we can put up a little fight here. And I was a little bit skeptic when he sort of approached me on that. I was just thinking, you know, get a little footy, yeah? It'll look good on the scorecard, you know. It's but yeah, as it happened, yeah, we just batted, and it did become easier. You know, and they also I think they were pretty greedy on getting wickets. Mm-hmm. So they were very attackive and leaked a few runs. And, you know, 10 overs in, 15 overs in, we were sort of back in it. I mean, still up against it, but we had a real chance then of maybe getting there.
Well, I found that quite funny when you said just get a quick 40. Because you ended up getting a bit more than a quick 40 rulluff. You ended up getting 165 not out from 122 balls, 24 boundaries and a six. It is one of the most incredible List A innings I've ever seen, probably, in particular in county cricket. Joe, would you agree with that? Is it up there for you in terms of one of the best, definitely Royal London, but in terms of 50 over knocks in domestic cricket, would it be up there for you as well?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any that I've seen like personally and I just can't. Like better than that. It was an incredible knock. I mean, well, one thing I will actually say is, does it annoy you that you only hit 1 6? Because you obviously hit all these runs, 165 off, like 120 balls, but you only hit 1 6. Does that annoy you a bit?
Yeah, you'd imagine if you get 165, 120 balls, you're going to hit a few sixes. But actually, now that you mentioned it, I thought I hit a few more, but apparently only one. So, I think it wasn't required for us to hit big. I think obviously the more we batted, the rate was never out of control. So I think that's what helped us on the day. There was never a period where it got up to eights and we sort of had to take a few extra risks. We could just bat and Taunton being the ground it is, it's going to give you runs for good shots. So yeah, I would have liked to hit a few more sixes. It always looks better on the scorecard, but no, very happy with that we could pull off the win that day.
I was going to say, yeah, 165 and out, not too bad at all. In terms of
you still say that, don't you? 1 6 or not, you still
exactly. So it's some magnificent innings. The closest I can think of is Sam Haynes 150 against Worcestershire in 2019. But again, we weren't 22 for 5. That was the key with this innings, okay. And for all the listeners out there, this is what you have to realise: 22 for 5. It's extraordinary. Like at that moment, if you're a Surrey bowler, I'd love to actually have one of the Surrey bowlers from that day on the podcast. Because you've got to be thinking, 22 for 5, we're in this. We'll probably get them out for less than 100. And then 30 overs later, you've lost the game. Like, is it? It's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. And it is a fantastic memory for Somerset fans. And in terms of another one, Rulluff, of course, 2019, that Royal London One Day Cup final against Hampshire. What about that day? What do you remember from that Lord's final? Because it is an incredibly memorable day for Somerset fans.
Yeah, I mean, on a personal view, I was very nervous that day. I think just the fact that we've come so close with Championship cricket and getting a trophy. We've had a finals day since I've been there. So I was really motivated to get the trophy that day. And I think my nerves, I can't remember the last time I was that nervous over a cricket game. Because obviously the occasion, it's at Lord's and, you know, we got an opportunity to secure a trophy for the club. And it's a bit of a blur. I remember, I think early on, they drove one to me at cover, took the catch. And then I remember Healy dropping off Davies bowling. And then the next ball, he got him out.
Yeah.
So like little spots like that. But other than that, and then obviously the winning runs, but like the whole chase, I can't remember anything of our chase.
Really?
I remember a lot of the fielding stuff, but the chase was just, I was in the change room and just, I was so nervous. It was just one of those days where I was just very nervous over it.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. And in terms of that catch at cover, and Iron Donald, wasn't it? The first wicket in the Lord's final. What a celebration that was, by the way, Rulluff.
I think there was a lot of relief and I actually took it. But lucky, because he hit it really hard, but hit it straight at me, so that helped. But it was a good day. And all for Somerset, you know, the fans that came down, the support we had, it was unbelievable. I mean, yeah, it was, I think, without having their noise there that day, it would have been a tough ask.
Mm. And of course, that just stresses the importance of supporters, doesn't it? Of course, 2020, no supporters were allowed in other than a couple of pilot events at the Oval and one at Edgbaston in a friendly. But yeah, that support, it really does boost you, doesn't it? And I suppose 2020's kind of given everyone that perspective now of what it's like without fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think playing in 2020, I found it very, very hard without the crowds, you know. And it almost feels like a pre-season warm-up game type of, you know, nobody in, play a game of cricket, and that's it. But, yeah, so hopefully this season we can have, well, it looks like we're going to have majority of it with crowds in, which is an added bonus.
Yeah, we need to be back, don't we?
Everyone's hoping for that. It would be so good.
And Rulof, would it be fair to say that you feed off the crowd? Because, of course, in the IPL, I remember quite a few iconic celebrations for both RCB, which my franchise, and Delhi as well. Of course, for Somerset, you love a good celebration. Would you say that you feed off the energy of a crowd? Would you say that that's a fair comment, or would you disagree with that?
No, definitely. I think obviously, what happens in a game and little moments in the game, the crowd picks up on that. And, you know, when the noise levels just pick up a bit and, you know, the tension becomes a bit more, and it's just everything that a crowd brings just feeds into a player's sort of emotional state, which then the celebrations come and you're successful. It's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and we do need crowds in, obviously, when it's safe. But it'll be great that day for you know, fans and players alike, for crowds to come back in. But going back to that final, Rulof, there is one person I would like to ask about, generally, not just about that final, and that is Tom Banton. He obviously scored 50 in that final, you know, kind of pretty much won the game for Somerset.
Yeah, partnership.
Yeah. And what is he like as a player? Because we've seen him play all over the world now. He's played IPL in the Big Bash, and of course for England, he's in the PSL at the moment. But just how good do you think he can be? Because he's obviously not playing in the IPL this year to focus on Red Bull cricket. He obviously has test ambitions. Just how good do you think he can be?
Oh, I think the sky's the limit to him. I think at his age, what he's done since playing for Somerset and gone on to play in leagues, the type of knocks and shots that he's able to play at that, I won't say that young age, but with a limited amount of experience, I think he can go a very long way in becoming an amazing cricketer, test cricketer, all formats for England. He's definitely got the ability. There's no doubt about that. So hopefully he can kick on and become a fixed figure in all three formats.
Yeah, and it would be great to see from, of course, a Somerset perspective, see someone representing England in all three formats. And also from an England perspective, because you can never have too many class cricketers, can you? And I mean, he's already shown his class.
No, 100%. I think England is currently showing, you know, I think there's a lot of sort of unrest on how they select teams and who they rest. But it just shows you how they're growing their pool of players.
Yeah.
It's not just the 11 or the 14 that they've been. I think the amount of players that's been involved in three formats and games has been so many. And it just gives them that so many more options of guys has had experience at that highest level and been playing at that level to when the time comes to pressing their button, they're ready to play. So I think there is definitely a method behind all the selection and debates that's going on.
Yeah. Delstay made some fantastic points about the rotation policy, saying getting in these young players, as you've just rightfully said, and bringing them in, getting them some experience. Although maybe in the short term, we may not be, you know, replicating that in terms of successes on the field. But the long-term game, because we've got a few World Cups coming up in the next few years, of course, potentially another iteration of the World Test Championship. Yeah, the long-term games are going to be there for England to see. And to be honest, what do you make of the rotation policy itself, Rulof? You in favour of that in maybe not only in international cricket, but what about in domestic as well, given these circumstances?
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think this year obviously showed it up a bit more because of COVID and being in bubbles. So for the well-being of the players, it was probably the better move to have a rotation system in place. And it sort of surprisingly has worked. Guys have stepped up that's come in that wasn't usually in the fold. I mean, if you look at, just for instance, the spinners now, I mean, you've had Dom doing well, Vici, Moen. You know, it's traditionally in the England side, you're not going to have three of them hanging around in the squad. You know, you've got Swanee and then it's Siemens on the bench. So I think that stuff like that, that's a massive bonus for them to see what guys are able to do. I mean, Stone, for instance, what an impact he's made. And, you know, with Jimmy and Broad there, you'd never think, and obviously Woody, and you'd never think that guy would give a go. And now he's got his go, maybe because of what COVID has presented. But and he's made an impact, and people are talking about him. So that's a massive, massive plus on the rotation system. And I'm very forward. And just to come back, in county cricket, I suppose you can also have a similar thing. Maybe not to that extent, because obviously when COVID's gone, you want to pick your best 11, and you still want to develop players and you want to give them exposure. I think it will just depend on county to county how they go about it. Do they prioritize a certain format, give guys experience in a different format? You know, I think counties do that sometimes. But I think that's the way to do it. It depends where your priorities are and how you want to go about giving guys exposure.
Great point. Really, really good point. And just going back to Ollie Stone, what a player. I've said it so many times here on the podcast, 4 for 68 in that second test match in Chennai, doing Warwickshire very, very proud. He's one of our finest seamers. Him and Henry Brooks, my word.
Is this a Warwickshire podcast?
Yeah, well said, Ralph. Well said.
I just want to make sure I'm not on the wrong call there.
It is indeed it's the County Cricket Podcast, but with, you know, little splashes and sprinkles of Warwickshire County Cricket Club bias in there from time to time, Ralph. But no, I'm glad you mentioned Ollie Stone, and of course Tom Banton. What a fantastic young player he is. But Ralph, coming back onto topic then. On the flip side of that, we've spoken there about highlights and favourite moments. But of course, in cricket, it's a roller coaster. There's ups and downs, peaks and troughs. What would you say has been the toughest moment from your time in county cricket?
Oh, I would say 2016. Because in the championship, we won our game in 3 days, and we were leading the county championship. We were going to win it. I think it was Middlesex were playing Yorkshire at Lords. And they were still both in a chance. They had to win the game to win the title. So both of them were still in it. And it was going to be a draw and, you know, win the cup and rest is history. And I remember that Sky was at the county ground doing like a little piece on as the game unfolds, you know, doing interviews and all that. And we were kicking football on the field. And some of the boys were inside watching the game. And the next minute, somebody shouted from the balcony saying, listen, they started with toss-ups. And I was like, what do you mean? And everybody was like upset. And I was like, I had no clue what was going on. Went in, watched it, and guys were literally standing still in the crease and just lobbing it up for guys to hit it all over the place. And I was like, no, this can't be happening, you know? And as that afternoon unfolded, it was just like, oh, it's just, it didn't feel right. And that's one of my disappointments in my time playing here, just seeing that. But I mean, for me personally, I'll never consider doing that. But I mean, I suppose they were both in for a chance. If I was put in that position, whether that was with Middlesex or with Yorkshire, would I have maybe buckled and said, listen, let's make a game of it. And we still got a chance to win. But yeah, I would say that was one of my low points playing county cricket.
Well, Ralph, I'm not glad that you mentioned that, but obviously with Somerset and the county championship, it has just been a bridge too far, hasn't it? And we spoke earlier about Somerset's Red Bull dominance. This fantastic evolutionary arms race almost with Essex County Cricket Club has made for some fantastic viewing in Red Bull cricket for the past two, three seasons. It really has. But in terms of the county championship itself, is that still a massive, massive goal of yours, Roloff? Because it is still, as I said, it's that trophy. It's a trophy too far for Somerset. It's one that they still haven't won somehow. 2016 came so close. And then, of course, we had that fantastic final day at Lords. 2019, that washed out game in Taunton. And then 2020 in the Bob Willis Trophy final, losing at Lords. Do you think that Somerset can win it? And would you really like to put that almost as your number one priority during the remainder of your time at Somerset?
Oh, 100%. I think that is definitely one that I want to be a part of. I think, obviously, having, I think, what's it, 4 out of the last 5 years, we've come second. I see it as a massive positive. We're doing a lot of things right. We're competing. I think there's a lot of counties still looking for a method how to compete in Red Bull. I think we're getting closer to getting our recipe of winning it eventually. But I think, you know, it's just it's throwing in one or two more ingredients and we've got it. I think we were a bit unlucky in the last few years, but, you know, we're playing good cricket. And if we keep doing that, it's got to fall into place at some stage. So we must just keep doing what we're doing, playing good cricket, competing, and it will come.
Of course, yeah. That's the attitude that you have to have. Yeah. It's as simple as that, and it will, because Somerset have been so brilliant. In terms of consistency, you'd have to argue probably up there. I mean, Essex as well, of course, but Essex did have that relegation, didn't they? And they came back up in 2017 and have just been this unstoppable force ever since. I just wanted to ask a question about Essex, though, Rulliff. Do you feel there's a big rivalry there? Because you two have been the top two. You are the proper big boys of Red Bull cricket in England right now. Do you feel almost a bit of an extra splash of rivalry in there when you play Essex, or is it just another game to you?
Well, I think starting off, it was just another game. You know, it's just competing against another team. But I think as the years have gone on now, where it's always us and them, there's always going to be a bit of extra spice. But it's a good spice. I think both teams, both clubs know that, you know, it's a big game. It's a big game and the end result of the season. So it's an awesome rivalry to have. It is what it is. It's those fine margins when we play against each other, and we know that can be a massive impact end of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always the clash of the Titans, isn't it, at the moment? Essex versus Somerset.
It's a great game. It is a really good game. Like, well, I just said the best game to watch at the moment. That's the one that you want to watch. So what was, obviously, last season being so different, was the mindset almost different knowing you were competing in a different way? Because it's a whole different tournament in Red Bull cricket, a whole different structure of Red Bull cricket. Was that different, you know, compared to how you normally compete against Essex? Obviously, you weren't in the same group and you only played them once. Was that different? Were they not on your mind at all? Or did you kind of, you know at some point you're probably going to have to play them, because realistically, you're both the strongest two teams?
Yeah, I think you obviously look at the fixtures and you look where they're at and where we're at. But obviously, there's a lot of good teams that you need to worry about. It's not just Essex that's competing. I mean, there's so many teams that on their day can hurt you. And you just got to be focused for every game. And even though it was a different comp, different structure, I mean, we still went out to win every game. And if we win every game and we compete to win every game, we will be there in the end. We knew we'll go to Lords if we do that. So it was different, but, and we did think we will probably get them in the final. There's so many teams that can upset you, and you got to be on the ball all the time to make sure that doesn't happen.
100%. But talking along the lines of tough moments as well, Rulliff, who do you say has been the toughest bowler over the years? You mentioned a lot there about Essex, of course. A fantastic bowler who plays for the Eagles is Simon Harmer, an absolute wizard. Would you say that he's the toughest bowler that you've ever faced in county cricket? Or is there somebody else who do you say really stands out in terms of the bowling department?
No, I wouldn't say Army. Army obviously is a serious bowler, and he's shown what he can do and what he's done over the past few seasons. But I think for me, I found Onions odd. I don't know if it was maybe because it was my first season for Somerset up in Durham, mm-hmm. in April. But yeah, no, the skill that he's shown showed there was just it was tough. It's just tough. It's so much movement with the ball. I think excessive spin or excessive pace doesn't really always is not always the toughest. I think obviously while our guys move the ball, and I mean you look at Steve-O, he's not express pace, but he's got a serious skill level, and I'm not too sure, but I think I would go with Onions. I found that tough.
Good choice.
Yeah, that's about. Yeah, I would say. I've found that the toughest.
Fair enough. Yeah, Onions and Steve-O. Steve-O gets mentioned every single podcast. He really does. He's Mr. County Cricket, isn't he? And he must be, is he a nightmare to face, Rulliff? What actually goes through your head when you're facing Darren Stevens? Because we've had a lot of guests on this podcast. saying that he's a very, very difficult bowler to face before the first ball's even bowled.
Yeah, so I haven't faced him much in red ball, to be fair. I've faced him a few times in white ball, which is a bit different. But red ball, I've heard guys speak about him. And it's, you know, you go around the country and you hear guys go, oh, we've got Steve-O this weekend. So it's, no, he is pretty much Mr. County Cricket. And, you know, still doing it at the age of 44. It's a serious, serious effort.
Mm-hmm.
It is indeed. It certainly is. Age is this number.
Yes.
Exactly. That's what I'm starting to tell myself.
What do you reckon you'll be playing till 44, Rulof?
Ooh, big question that, but I hope not. 44, it's another long stretch. Well, if I'm fit and well, you know, I want to play as long as I possibly can. I love the game. I love playing, love competing. So we'll see how our time develops and how everything stays in place or not.
Of course, yeah. Time will tell, as they would say. Very, very cliche.
Exactly. But let's kind of flip that question a little bit on its head then. Who would you say the toughest batsman that you've bowled to is?
Toughest batter? I think probably in county cricket. I'm not sure. I always actually find it tough bowling to Riley. I think Riley is a very good player. Play off spin. So if I had to point somebody out now, I'd probably have to go with Riley.
Is there a bit of banter between you two as well? Obviously, both South African born. Of course, you bowl into his hitting arc. He's a very, very powerful batsman. Is there some good on-field banter between yourself and Riley Russo?
Oh, there's always a bit of banter. I think in the past in South Africa, he's had one or two over me. So he always sort of reminds me on the sly that he's going to take me down. But luckily, it hasn't happened over the last couple of years. But there's always some remarks that he tries to put me on the back foot.
Again, just part and parcel, isn't it?
What about another player who I'm not actually sure if you would have bowled to him, but I'm just going to throw his name out there. It would have been more at the start of your time with Somerset. Kevin Peterson. Yeah. Did you ever get the chance to bowl to him in a T20?
I've never played against him, really.
Oh, fair enough.
I think I played maybe... I think he came over to South Africa one year for the Dolphins to play one or two games. I don't know if it was maybe a warm-up before England series or something, but that's the only memory of me playing against him, really. So, no, but he was a serious player.
Without a doubt, yeah.
He could also score all around the ground and, you know, when situations were, when the teams were in trouble, he could still play like it's a flat wicket with the average bowlers. So that's the way he made it look. And KP was a serious player.
Yeah. If only he was around today for England.
Yeah. And I just want to throw one more name out before we talk about heading into this season, Rulof. And that's AB de Villiers. Came over in 2019, played in the South Group, of course, for Middlesex. What's it like just even having him in county cricket? And if you played against him before, I know that he did play for the Titans, of course. But what's he like to bowl to?
Yeah, he's as tough as they come to bowl to. There's a reason they call him Mr. 360.
Yeah.
He's and I think what makes him that good, especially in white ball cricket, is he reads the game, he reads the bowlers so well. I remember watching an over where he was lapping and sweeping Dale in the IPL.
Sunrise, yep.
At bowling at that pace, you've got to sort of have an idea where the guy's going to bowl, you know. And I think he's very, very good at reading plays and reading tactics of bowlers. He's a phenomenal player, and he'll probably go down in history as one of the best.
100%, 100%. One of my absolute all-time favourites, Abraham Benjamin de Villiers. And that over, I'm so glad you mentioned it. Absolutely legendary. Watch that. For those who haven't, AB de Villiers versus Dale Steyn. Dale Steyn is bowling that white ball at around about 90 miles an hour. And AB's getting down on one knee, sweeping it, lapping it, as you said, Rulof. Oh my goodness. One of the best overs I've ever seen in T20 cricket. Simple as that. Absolutely legendary stuff from ABD. But that's enough about talking about individual matchups then, Rulof. Let's talk about 2021, because it does promise to be a very intriguing season, of course. Got the brand new county championship structure, the Royal London One Day Cup's back, the 100, of course, is here, the T20 Blast is back with the North-South group system. What are your personal ambitions heading into 2021? What are you looking to achieve from a personal level heading into this next season?
Just win trophies. That's about it. I think just to win trophies for Somerset and then for London Spirit. I think that's my main aim. End of the day, I think if I'm chunking up to the bigger picture, that's about it. I want to contribute to winning trophies, and yeah, that's about it.
Well, fair enough. I mean, they're as good a goals as any. Yeah. Can't really ask for much more than that in professional sport. So yeah, and what about the? I mean, I mentioned it earlier. Obviously, last season in 2020, the county championship structure was way different. What about this season? What do you think of this new structure? Because it is totally different. You're obviously, in a random pool, in red ball cricket, a random group, alongside Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Leicestershire, Middlesex, and Surrey. So, what are your thoughts on the new structure, and how do you think that will affect the way red ball cricket is played?
Yeah, I think obviously it's totally different how we've got used to the two division county championship, but I actually like it a bit. It gives counties the opportunity to win it.
Yeah.
And I think for the game in England, it's going to be a massive, massive up, because there's traditionally counties that don't compete in red ball, and they put all their eggs in one basket in winning white ball trophies. And this gives them an opportunity to obviously maybe develop players to compete in the red ball formats also. So I really enjoy it that everybody's got a chance to win it. So that's definitely what I take out of it is it'll be good. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we all are, aren't we? As I said, 2021 promises to be a fantastic season. Fans are allowed back, even better. And of course, the brand new county championship structure is going to be very, very interesting. The three group system, group two as well, the group of death, as we coined it here on the County Cricket Podcast. It is a very, very, very strong group. So there should be some fantastic matchups and contests in that particular county championship group. But Rulof, just one final question for today's main segment before we go on to a couple of listener questions and, of course, teammates. What are your future ambitions with Somerset County Cricket Club? I know you've already said trophies, and of course the county championship is going to be a massive, massive milestone for you to try and achieve. But what about in terms of personal milestones? Have you got anything personal that you wish to achieve in the remainder of your time down at Taunton?
Well, as I say, the only currency is runs and wickets. So I want to, obviously, in contributing to two trophies, I've got to get runs, I've got to get wickets, but you know, it's just keep developing my game to be able to do that. I mean, I am an experienced player, but I need to keep developing and make sure that I put myself in a position to perform. I think that's a big thing. So putting a number on how many runs and how many wickets, I'm not too interested in that. But it's just keep developing and challenging myself to contribute in the best possible way.
Good answer, Rulof. Very, very good answer. And of course, both myself and Joe here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you the very, very best of luck. We mentioned it right at the start of the podcast. You're a bit of an icon down at Somerset with the celebrations. And you're a fantastic character and obviously university love down at Taunton. So we both wish you the very, very best of luck. It's going to be a fantastic few years, I reckon. But let's go into today's listener questions, because the first one is a very, very interesting one, because we've already mentioned him here on today's podcast. You know who it is already, don't you? Really?
Yeah, I know. He's an idiot. Oh, what an idiot.
Well, this first question is from Simon Harmer.
Oh.
And his question for you, Rulof, is why do you wear the number 52 on your back?
Okay. So, obviously, you wear of Ray Lewis.
Yes, in the NFL, Baltimore Ravens, middle linebacker.
Yes.
Unit.
100% him. So I love the way he operates and this way he goes about things, the energy he brings. So I basically picked the number on him. And I think also the day they asked me was I think I was just coming into professional cricket, and like the PA, she came to me and said, like, what number do you want on your back? And I've never thought about things like that. And so I panicked a bit and I just came up with 52. But Joe, that is the story.
Did you regret that? Did you wish you thought more about it?
No, not really. No. It's just a number at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I'm not too fussed about birthdays or special meanings and all that. And it's a number I stuck with from the start of my career. So luckily not many players pick it. So if I get into a new team, and the number is always free. So happy. And I just want to thank Simon for raising that question.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Genuinely, I never knew. So to find out, Ray Lewis, of course, absolute monster. I've already said it. He was a very, very good linebacker in the NFL. So, interesting. And of course, Simon, if you are listening, always welcome here on the County Cricket Podcast to talk all things county cricket and Essex. But moving on to our next question then, this is from Harry Hayden again. Pretty funny question. Have you trademarked your helicopter shot, Roloff?
Well, it's quite hard to trademark it when there's a thousand of guys before playing it. So, I've got a bit of a different variation of shots. It's not very orthodox, but I don't think there's any trademarks going around with the shots I play.
That's the thing. See Rashid Khan's helicopter six to win the game in the PSL. Yeah, that needs to be trademarked because that was an outrageous shot.
He's also very unorthodox, but serious player. Absolute jet.
Without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt.
In fact, talking of unorthodox, Roloff, I remember a shot, actually, of yours. Was it a couple of years back? Was it One Day Cup or T20 Blast? You went down on your knee and almost it was like a deflection down to fine leg. What about that shot?
Yeah, because normally I fall over when I do that. So they, off my name, they've called it the roll-off.
Oh.
Yeah, the roll-off or something. Ridiculous. But yeah, no, I get myself into some dodgy positions and... it's as I say, if you're scared of the ball, you got to get out the way somehow. So, and I always manage to get out the way. So, then some of the shots do look a bit funny, but it's effective. That's all that matters, I guess.
100%. Doesn't matter how they come. We always say that with bowlers, don't we, Joe? Doesn't matter how the wickets come. Doesn't matter how the runs come either.
Just says that you've hit a boundary or scored X amount of runs on the scorecard. So
exactly. That's there's no comments column there.
100%. And Roloff, the last one. This is from a good friend of both myself and Joe, Dan Cricket, Mr. Dan Osmond.
Absolute
legend. I'm guessing you're already going to know this then, Roloff. Are you aware of the Roloff cult on Twitter?
No, I'm not. I've heard a lot of Dan Cricket. He's always mentioned somewhere and some remarks in on comments. So I actually got no idea who Dan Cricket is. So it's quite an interesting one. I'd actually like to meet him, to be fair.
Well, Roloff, he's going to absolutely love listening to this back. He does listen into our podcasts. And as I said, myself and Joe, lovely guy, Dan Osmond. He did just have one other question. Would you follow him back on Twitter at all?
Oh, yeah. I thought I already do, don't I? Okay. No, I have to get onto that.
Well, there you go. I was going to say, he's one of the biggest Roloff van der Merwe fans out there. So, Dan... Okay, when you see that notification come through on Twitter, you have us to thank today, mate. Brilliant. So that pretty much brings us to an end to today's listener questions then, and some fantastic answers there, Roloff. But of course, we do end today's podcast with everybody's favourite segment, which is, of course, teammates. So for all the listeners out there, basically how this segment works, we've got 10 questions for Roloff, all about his teammates and the characters that he shares his dressing room with down at Taunton. So Roloff, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
Let's give it a go.
Fantastic.
So the first one, in the Somerset dressing room, who has the best nickname?
Oh, it's got to be Trez, the banger. Banger's a mash. It's got to be banger. I'm just trying to think who else has got nicknames. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah, fair enough.
What about yourself, Roloff, the Bulldog?
Yeah, it's not a very exciting nickname, but... yeah, I suppose I'll take it.
It's better than Rolly or RVD, although RVD does right, to be fair.
Yeah, I must say, it's one thing that's tough in the UK. People really struggle to pronounce my name. So I've heard some serious variations of it.
What's the worst one?
Something about row 5. Yeah, it's like, literally, it sounded like the guy said row 5. Like in the stands or something, and he was referring to me. So that's about the oddest one I've heard.
Brilliant. Moving on to our next one then, Roloff. This is always a popular one here on TCCP. Who's the teacher's pet down at Somerset? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, this is an easy one. I'm going to have to go with Max Waller, and I hope he listens to this. I'm going to go with Max Waller 100%. Future's bet.
Yeah, good choice.
Fair enough. Yeah, good player as well, Max Waller. I think goes under the radar.
That catch as well that he took.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
That was AB who we caught, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that was a serious catch.
Yeah.
But don't worry, he reminds us of that catch every week. So
yeah, you could never forget it. You can never forget. The next one, then. Who's the best at karaoke?
To be fair, I haven't heard too many of the guys sing karaoke, but I would imagine Jack Brooks will be very good. I think even if he just acts it and lags of the way through, I think Jack Brooks will probably be the best.
Good choice. Yeah, born entertainer, isn't he? Brooksy Ferret.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Be good to have on the podcast, wouldn't he, Joe? One day we'll try and get Jack on. Moving on to our next one then, Ruluf. In the same vein in terms of music, who's the team DJ at Taunton and what is their choice of music?
There's been a few. I'm just trying to think. Obviously, I'm more of the 80s, 90s sort of a vibe. George Bartlett is the worst DJ. I can tell you that for free.
What's the tunes?
It's those tunes. You know those songs where they don't really sing? It's just like doof, doof, doof and those type of songs. You know, I can't. George definitely is bottom of the list. I would say the best DJ, I'm going to have to go with Joel Tratt, our S&C coach, 100%. He's got some serious tunes. Also, more in my range, the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, fair enough. So it's perfect. We forgot to mention that, actually. You can actually choose the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Oh, you cannot.
And you can nominate yourself.
You can nominate yourself. Sorry, I forgot to mention that in the intro. Moving on to the next one then, Ruluf. This is an interesting one, and I think we already know who it is. Who's got the best celebrations at Somerset?
I think the celebrations get the most reaction. I'm going to have to go with Max Waller again. I'm a one-trick pony when it comes to celebrations. Max has got actually quite a few. You know, he's got the salute. He had the worm come out. He's had unbelievable stuff that he's come up with. So I would have to go with Max on that one.
You've got a couple down at Somerset. And Ruluf, I just have one question. Can you do the worm?
Only on a very soft surface because my techers aren't that great. I hit the floor quite hard when I do the worm.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ruluf. Not ideal. Just from us two at the Carrot Cricket Podcast, if you're on a soft surface next year, well, this season even, if you're on a soft surface this season and you take an incredible wicket, hat trick, score a century, whatever, please do the worm for us. It'll make our day.
Okay. I'm going to have to go and practice that first, but yeah, I'll see if we find one.
Fantastic.
The next one then. Who is the kit man's nightmare? Who is the messiest in the changing room?
I think. Actually, Georgie actually likes leaving his stuff everywhere. Oh, no, I lie. Craig Overton. I'm going to go with Craig Overton. There's always gears lying everywhere. So, yeah, and he also spreads. He's got like three bags and he spreads it all over the change room. So we can't really move. Yeah, so I'm gonna go with Craig on that one.
Fair enough.
Decent choice. Next question then. We'll switch it up. Who is the social media addict down at Taunton? Who's always on their Instagram, Twitter, etc.?
If I'm coming up with the same names over and over, yeah. Max Waller is relentless on Twitter. On any social media platform, he's very switched on and he likes to comment on other people's posts and Waller's he's definitely the social media guy.
Yeah, he's good on social media. Waller, yeah, as you say, very active on Twitter, and he posts some good stuff there.
He's got a few like the Wednesday wickets and Thursday throwbacks, and he's all over that.
Got the entire schedule going. Fair play.
Fair enough to him, yeah. The next one. Who is the best cook?
Cook. So does barbecuing or brying count as cooking? I think I'm going to have to go with our new addition in Mashantha Langa.
We'll whip up a good braai.
Oh, seriously, good braai. A lot of red meat, you know, stuff that I like. So I'm going to have to go with him with the way he puts up the braai.
Fair enough. Yeah, of course. Obviously, for the majority of our listeners who aren't South African, I just want to explain what a braai is, Roloff.
Yeah, so barbecue, as everybody knows, and it's a sauce. So barbecue is a sauce flavor. So it can't be a braai. So a braai is actually lighting up a fire, cooking some meat, where a barbecue, as a lot of people know, I would like to think it's a sauce, but a lot of people disagree with me on that. But yeah, so it's basically, as the people in the UK know, as a barbecue, that's a braai. So same thing. Same thing.
And
same, but different.
I have a question for you though, Roloff.
Yes.
Can you cook with gas with a braai?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
have never in my life done that. So, and I'm not going to start now. So even here in the winters, I get the coals out and get the meat on. I'm definitely not a gas guy. I'm anti-gas. Don't ask me that again, ever.
That's how you can tell South African. And the final one about the braai, obviously, Roloff. What do you actually have on a braai? What's your go-to in terms of actual food?
Obviously, number one, red meat. So steak, lamb chops. That's predominantly what I work with. I love that. So beef and lamb is basically the two. I'm not a big fan of putting chicken on a braai. Chicken or sausages or stuff like that you actually need to do either in the oven or on the stove. Red meat's number one.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's very, very popular with the braai. Bringing the conversation back from South African cooking, though, of course. Let's go on to today's penultimate question. And this is always an interesting one here at the County Cricket Podcast. Who is the best golfer down at Taunton?
I'm not going to mention his name again. So I'm going to... It's not Waller, even though he thinks so. But I'm going to go with... Lewis Gregory. I've lost most of my games against him, so I'm going to have to go with Lewis. And Max being my partner, he let me down, so I'll go with Lewis.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Lewis Gregory can hit a golf ball like he can hit a cricket ball, then yeah, he mustn't be half bad. He mustn't be.
There's a lot of guys that hit cricket balls, golf balls like cricket balls, but when you hit them that wide, that far, you know, it's also a bad thing.
That's my excuse as well. Just hit it too much like a cricket ball.
And are we on the same page?
We are indeed, Roloff, apart from mine ends probably not even in the rough. It goes off the course, probably into the neighbouring streets or something. Yeah, my golfing ability is absolutely non-existent. Same with the cricket, to be honest, but you plug away. Simple as that. You go, if you enjoy it, you do it, don't you?
Yeah, and I mean, a visit to the driving range beforehand to get 30-odd balls is always a good idea.
Yeah, even with that being said, it doesn't really work for me. What's the longest you can drive, Roloff? What's the longest you ever hit a golf ball in yardage?
Oh, no, I've got no idea. Honestly, I have no idea. I've absolutely no clue. But I can tell you now, my furthest one would be deep in the rough. I can tell you that with a lot of confidence.
What about yourself, Joe?
I have never played golf on a golf course before. I'm just on a driving range and I could not tell you. So,
see, this is the thing. This is what's good about our local driving range. They have a yardage tracker. So me and my friends, oh my goodness, hilarious. I think I've still got it saved on my phone. I think I hit 241, which is not too bad at all for someone who absolutely despises golf sometimes, especially when it's getting tough.
That's quite a posh driving range, if you ask me.
Oh yeah, it is. It is.
it's a Warwickshire driving range, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. Or is it? No, it's not. It's comes under West Midlands. It's close to Warwickshire, though. We'll count it a bit like Edgbaston, I suppose, as an area. Historic Warwickshire.
But anyway, yeah, bringing back onto teammates for the final question. Again, always a bit of an interesting one, this. Who is the best at computer games?
Benton. I'm going to have to go with Tom Benton.
Mm. Yeah, I bet he plays a lot with England. So
yeah, he's always playing this. What's that shooting game thing?
Warzone.
COD, yeah.
Yeah, COD. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, COD. He plays that nonstop. He's always got some gadget arriving in the post to supplement his gaming experience. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go with Tom Benton.
Fair enough.
No surprises there. We've already said the England boys love it, don't they? Ben Stokes, yeah, yeah. Archer, all on Twitch, Brody as well. Yeah, they like it, don't they? The England boys. But yeah, I mean, that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. And of course, it brings us to an end to an absolutely brilliant podcast here on TCCP today. So roll off just before we go then and end today's podcast. Do you have any just final wrap-up words, anything to plug or promote, social media channels, any events, for example?
Get down to the Somerset County Cricket Ground or the Coopers Associate County Cricket Ground and watch Somerset play some good cricket. That's basically all I've got. And thank you guys for having me today. It's been a real good chat and really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear, Roloff. Really is. And we've loved having you on. Okay, we really have. I mean, we weren't expecting it so early in the podcasting days, but it's been a fantastic podcast. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And of course, Roloff, I'll be leaving your social media channels, which are, you know, vastly bigger than ours, but still in the podcast description. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Roloff, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about all things Somerset and County Cricket. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.